The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
Charles, it's the 100th episode of The Counter. Pretty exciting, huh?
Yeah, really exciting. And
that's a lot of talking.
Yeah, that's a lot of talking about football. You know, we should have had Stephen on for the 100th episode as like a little reunion. But
maybe I'll patch him in. I'll send him. I'm just gonna send him the link and see if he shows up.
All right, yeah, that works for me.
Do you think the Ringer like has him constantly working or?
I don't know. I think they got him a little busy, but I think maybe around this time of the week his schedule lightens up. So yeah, just throw him the link and see what happens.
All right. Done. We have some good things to talk about. The Aaron Rodgers thing we could talk about, but apparently it's HIPAA. I'm so tired of people just using words however they want to use them. NFL players continue to do this, like refusing to talk about their vaccine status or whatever their thoughts are and pretending that HIPAA covers this somehow. We've just lost the thread, man. Like people just use words however they want, say whatever. But we will dig in on the Aaron Rodgers thing. Apparently he is not vaccinated. Speaking of using words, when he was asked about it earlier this season, he said he was immunized, which apparently was his sort of tricky way of saying that he was not vaccinated, but he felt as though he was immune. So we'll dig in on that. Charles wrote a column about it yesterday that was excellent. We're also going to talk about the Odell Beckham Jr. situation in Cleveland, where it appears that just the most Browns thing possible has happened, which is that instead of trading, you know, instead of like tamping down the unrest and trading of probably, you know, NFL trades are a lot of times there's not a lot to them, but they probably could have got something for Odell Beckham Jr. And now, instead of making it work, they have missed the trade deadline. Odell Beckham Sr. is posting videos online showing all the times Baker Mayfield failed to throw his son the ball. LeBron James is advocating for Odell Beckham to move. I mean, it's just a total mess. So we'll get in on that, and then we will talk about week 9 picks against the spread. Charles will let us know, what to bet on, and we'll go from there. All right, let's talk about Aaron Rodgers. Is this the weirdest guy in the NFL? I mean, the NFL is a big league with a lot of very strange people, but he's
definitely weird. I just don't understand like why he chooses to act like this, because clearly I feel like Aaron Rodgers like clearly has some beliefs that he wants to hide from the rest of us, like stuff that he knows is like, you know, it's not cool to be thinking this, but you know, like you think back on some of the stuff he was talking about this summer, like complaining about cancel culture and, you know, going on that little weak holdout he did, which only ended up him getting Randall Cobb and like a handshake with the Packers, like two fingers behind their back. Yeah, we'll trade you next year. We'll definitely trade you next year. It's just kind of bizarre that, you know, he's trying to like play both sides of, you know, this situation when physically, like either you got the vax or you didn't. So
right.
When he, you know, goes back to, he goes back to August when someone asks him about, you know, did you get the vaccine? He says, yeah, I'm immunized, which you kind of go back and you watch the video with this.
Right. Now you realize like,
yeah, he like stumbled over the word a little bit, looking down, didn't want to look people in the eye. And I think, you know, at the time, he's like, okay, that's Aaron Rodgers' weird way of saying that he got the vaccine. But turns out he didn't. And he's kind of been fooling basically everyone except the Packers in the NFL, because they have, you know, a record of who isn't and who is vaccinated. So now when he gets caught with, you know, when he catches coronavirus this week, everyone's like, wow, he's out for some of his game. Wait, he's not vaccinated, but he said that he was. I just don't really understand why he felt the need to kind of lead people along like this, especially when you know, like how, flimsy this is and like how thin the margins are for unvaccinated players. And you know, you're in a season where the whole point of you coming back here was to try to win one more ring before you get out of here, and now you know, especially with how the NFC is playing out, where you got the win over the Cardinals last week, so that's going to help you with your tiebreaker stuff. But now you have a game against a desperate Chiefs team that like really has their back against some walls and needs to get something going. And you're going to miss that game because you like lied about being vaccinated or didn't get vaccinated and was pretend that you were. It's just kind of a weird situation that he's put himself in.
And now, and poor Jordan Love too.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's hell of a first start, buddy. Yeah. Go take Patrick Mahomes on the road. You know, another annoying part about this is we're still deprived of seeing like the Patrick Mahomes versus Aaron Rodgers matchup that we've always wanted, because the first
time that's a good point. Yeah.
Mahomes was hurt with the Matt Moore stuff, and then they didn't make it to the Super Bowl because they kind of crapped out the end of the game versus Tampa Bay. And now Aaron has coronavirus after, you know, trying to trick people into thinking that he was vaccinated.
I leave for a couple of months and you guys just start canceling. Cancel culture is taking over the counter.
Yeah, that's right.
Welcome there he back, is. Steven Ruiz is here.
I had to come back for the 100th episode. Am I getting paid for this?
You can talk to someone else about that. I'm not concerned about that.
I think Chuck might be near you right now, so he can buy you like a Starbucks coffee or something. If you guys,
yeah, I'm in DC right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so you know, if you guys, that's about all the payment we can offer you, Steven.
Yep.
We apologize, Steven. What are your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers?
He's an idiot. He's a liar. I feel like I have no, like, I can't, you guys can't fire me, so I can just like, really go off the cuff.
Yeah, you got carte blanche, man.
Say whatever you want.
I don't think our bosses know that we do this show, so they're probably not going to fire us either.
I don't even think they know I left. I still get USA Today retweets every now and then.
Okay, my question with Aaron Rodgers, like, how did you think that you were just, like, did he legit think he was just immune from whatever homeopathic like water treatment thing he did? Like, I don't know. Did he get like some essential oils that were supposed to like give him antibodies? And you know, the funniest part to me yesterday was, you know, I think it was Rappaport reported that Aaron Rodgers like wanted coronavirus antibodies, but he didn't want the vaccine. Like, what do you think the vaccine is, buddy? Like, that's how you're gonna stay safe. And then you read the stuff like his girlfriend's eating clay and eating dirt and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, okay, you know, this is kind of starting to track a little bit. He's, you know, just become one of these guys that doesn't think that his body is pumped up with vaccines, so he doesn't want to take this next one.
No, right. No, I think Rodgers like 100% believed that he was immunized or whatever he said. Because if your significant other comes to you and says, yeah, I eat clay and make my own medicine, and you don't immediately run in the other direction, I think you can be easily swayed into whatever homeopathic treatment he opted for.
Wasn't he also like hanging out with Miles Teller, and like Miles Teller blew up some movie by not being vaccinated? Like, these are just his people now, and this is who he is.
Did he go, how's Jordan? Was there truth to the rumor that he went to Canada to get this treatment?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised with anything.
I'm assuming our friend Seth Galina is involved somehow.
Almost certainly. There's only like 8 people in Canada, and Seth's one of them, except when he's in Cincinnati.
Yeah, which is like all the time now. He basically lives in Cincinnati. I don't know why he doesn't move there.
I do.
Cincinnati, probably.
I'm just saying, like, if you're going to have to be in Cincinnati every 2 weeks, and you got to like fly internationally to make that happen, I would probably consider.
Would he hang out with Joe Burrow if he moved there, you think?
No, would Joe Burrow hang out with Seth?
He'd question. Be hanging out with the Bangalorean and that whole crew. By the way, I have to give props to the Bangalorean, my arch nemesis. He tweeted out something that seemed to be pro-vax, and I didn't know it with him. I was on the fence with whether he was pro or anti-vax, but I'm glad to report the Bangalorean is on the right side of history.
There you go. There you go. How's Jordan Love going to do, Steven? Wait, what's this going to look like?
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. He looked okay in preseason, I want to say, based on the clips I saw on Twitter. I did not watch any Packers preseason. I don't want to pretend like I did. But he couldn't have picked a better defense to go up against, I'd say. Just throw it at Daniel Sorensen.
He looked okay in preseason, and he's going against a preseason defense. So I think that this is something that could – potentially work out for the Packers in this situation, but also at the same time, like, this is his first start, so we don't really know what this is going to look like. I think he's only thrown like 7 passes so far in his career, and I just think it'd be so funny if the Packers they get to the end of the season and they're like 15-2 because they lost this game because Rodgers lied about having coronavirus, and the Rams or the Cardinals are 16-1, and then Justice just has like a meltdown about this because he's so fixated on getting that number one seed, and like, this is a real roadblock if the Rams and Cardinals keep playing in the way that they do.
I have a question. The three of us are people that root for chaos, I'd say. Now, are we rooting for Jordan Love to go off on in this game?
Or yes,
will that
absolutely.
Be insufferable given the discourse surrounding Rodgers in the previous years when the nerds were telling us he was washed?
I want Jordan Love to go off just because, like, before the season, I think it was Greg Jennings or Jermichael Finley was like, you're going to have to replace Aaron Rodgers by week 4. And I didn't really know what they were talking about at the time, but maybe they knew what was up. So, you know, I want Jordan Love to go off just so, like, all the old salty Packers who, like, don't like Aaron Rodgers have a little bit more fuel for their fire for Monday hot takes.
That would be great. It's kind of funny how Rodgers has really turned into Brett Favre. At the end of his Packers,
having to play football in a small Wisconsin town is not the best thing for professional athletes.
It's like the same thing where, you know, we like you for most of your career, and then as we get to the end, you're like, you're actually not that cool. No. Actually, you know, you stand for a lot of things I don't like that much, including, you know, basically lying about getting a COVID vaccine. I think the interesting part with this is, like, the Packers, they've promoted a lot of stuff where Aaron Rodgers is not wearing a mask, like, on their social media stuff. And, you know, before games, like, if you're not vaccinated, you basically have to be wearing a mask almost at all times. And, you know, the pictures of him promoting his Halloween party, which we now know he was not supposed to be at. I think it's going to be interesting to see, like, the way that the league kind of backtracks and says, hold up, Green Bay, you know, what were we doing here? Because now we all look stupid. Like, if you knew that if Aaron wasn't vaccinated, I think the funny thing that Justice tweeted out was, if Aaron's not vaccinated and he's going to these press conferences without a mask, he's basically paying $15,000 every time to go to a press conference, which is just like, Aaron, just get the shot, dude. Like, you're going to pay, what, if you're a starting quarterback, you speak like at least like 3 or 4 times a week. So you're comfortable just burning like $50,000 a week just so you don't have to wear a mask. I think that's kind of ridiculous.
Here's going to be the funny thing is, let's say Rodgers does leave in the offseason. Then, I mean, you have to imagine the Packers are going to get punished for this in some way, because apparently they've been having the unvaxxed players, the ones that aren't lying about it, do Zoom press conferences, and they're having Aaron Rodgers do the in-person press conferences. So they know, like, they've been complicit in this. So I'm assuming they're going to get some punishment, and then Rodgers is going to walk away, and the Packers are still going to be dealing with whatever penalties they get. So it's kind of like when a coach commits recruiting violations and then just goes to a new school. That's what the Packers might be stuck with if Aaron Rodgers walks away from this. Hopefully they lose like a pick. I think they should. I feel like that's not too big of a penalty considering what we've seen the NFL do to other teams that have committed similar.
NFL discipline is like
pick last year.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. NFL discipline is impossible to try to figure out, right? Like, Daniel Snyder just creates the worst environment for anyone to work in, and nothing happens. And then, like, we lose picks for other things. Like, so who knows what could happen? But
also, this Aaron Rodgers thing kind of reminded me about, I was just thinking, like, before the season started, like, how easy would it be for one of these guys to just, like, fake that they got vaccinated? And apparently pretty easy, because, like, all you have to do is just say, I was immunized.
I got immunized. Oh, man. Aaron Rodgers has been around so long that he feels like family, and now we know what it's like to be his family. So it's just terrible. Let's talk about Odell Beckham. Steven, you wrote this. You wrote this piece for The Ringer. I guess that's where you work now. The Ringer.
Yeah, yeah. When I'm not writing for Outkick. I got a piece on Rodgers out at Outkick. Why aren't you talking about that?
That's right.
How did Odell Beckham Jr. and the Browns get to this point, and where do they go from here? So why don't you tell us, how did they get to this point? Where do they go from here?
So here's my thing, and I've said this before. Like, everyone's talking about how Odell's dad has been talking about how there's like maybe Baker's hating on Odell and he doesn't want him to shine. He doesn't want him to get whatever. I don't know what the implication was, but okay. Why can't the explanation just be that Baker Mayfield is not a good quarterback? Like, that's the explanation. When I watch that video, that's my takeaway. It's not like Baker is purposefully not targeting Odell Beckham when he's open. It's just that Baker Mayfield is panicking in the pocket when Odell Beckham's open and already throwing bad passes.
Your take is essentially that Baker Mayfield is not even competent enough to freeze out a receiver if he wanted to, because he just gets the ball and sort of panics and like just sort of has to do whatever.
Right. There are only a handful of quarterbacks that are good enough where they could just be like, all right, I'm not throwing to this guy and the offense is still going to function. Baker Mayfield is not on that list. But my real takeaway from the misconnection they seemed to have while they were together was that Baker Mayfield can't put touch on the football when he throws. Like, every throw is like 100 miles per hour and he puts his whole body behind it like a pitcher. And Odell Beckham just happens to run routes into areas of the field where you need touch to get him the ball. Baker can't get him the ball. So that's my theory. I don't know if it's backed up by actual film analysis, but that's what I've seen.
Right.
I agree with everything you said there, Stephen. I just kind of wonder, like, how did the Browns get themselves in this situation? Right. Like, you're about to get nothing for him because you missed the trade deadline. That is something that I just don't understand, because, like, we all saw this pairing wasn't working. Baker's getting frustrated. Odell's getting frustrated. Like, everyone around it seems to be getting frustrated. Why not just ship him off to another team that thinks that they can use him? Because it's not like Odell doesn't have any value left for himself now. So if you're going to be a team that cuts Odell right after the trade deadline, you just look dumb as hell. Like, I don't know, because, you know, just for me, I thought that this Browns front office and head coaching staff, they had like kind of a better clue or grasp of what was going on than previous regimes. I still think that's true, but this is just such a silly mistake that could have been avoidable. Because honestly, if you choose to trade Odell, I'm not saying you get a first round pick, but you could definitely swing someone to get in a second and some change. But now you're just going to let him go for nothing, and he's going to hit waivers, and he's going to end up like a Jacksonville Jaguar, which isn't fun for anybody.
And, no, that's painful.
And I think it was Kimberly Martin who reported that they had been talking to the Saints about a trade. And I'm just wondering, why were there negotiations? Why wasn't it just the Saints going, oh, can we trade for Odell? And you're just like, yeah, whatever you want to give us, we'll take it. Because that was the only way they were going to avoid having to pay this dead cap charge, was trading him. It would have cost $1.25 million to trade him. Now, when you're cutting him, whether you cut him or keep him on the roster and keep him inactive, it's going to be $8 million more dollars than you had to pay either way. Right. So why not? If the Saints were offering like a sandwich, you should have been like, yeah. Or even worse, if they're offering Taysom Hill.
What will happen? Will he get claimed off waivers, or will teams wait? Because the next 2 years of his deal are not guaranteed, right? Yeah. So he's actually a smart waiver pickup.
I imagine he would get claimed very early. I think the waiver process, I want to say, is the same as the draft order, right? Yeah. So right now, if you know we're going through the waiver options, the top five teams, the chance to get him would be Detroit, Houston, Miami, Jacksonville, and the Giants. It would be pretty funny if he ended up back in New York, because honestly, you can make a case that they should definitely be signing him after some of the injuries they've gone through. But I just hate the Browns that they've kind of put Odell in a situation where he's going back to a crappy team, and then people are just going to say, oh, he's overrated, he can't do this, he can't do that. Like, Jacksonville is my best hope, because, you know, I don't think that Tua is a great fit for him. Definitely know that Davis Webb isn't a great fit for him. Jared Goff not working. So let's just get Trevor a bona fide stud wide out and see if they can turn that thing around a little bit. And Odell has the speed that Urban Meyer clamors for all the time. So let's go ahead with this. But also, like, I don't understand what's supposed to be next for the Browns. I mean, you basically made him persona non grata. And Kevin Stefanski says he's not on the team anymore. So to me, this seems like a situation that's beyond reconciling, and I don't really know why they have put themselves in such a hard stance if you had no plans on trading him in the first place.
Yeah, I'm wondering, let's say he does make it past waivers. I don't know if that's going to happen. Like, I tend to agree. I don't know why you would pass up on having 3 years of roster control over Odell Beckham with no guaranteed money attached. That seems like a pretty good deal to me. Because if you watch that video that Odell's dad posted, the man is open a lot.
Yeah, he's getting open still. Right.
I'm surprised that Browns fans' reaction is, oh my God, I can't believe his dad posted this. And it's not, oh my God, our quarterback stinks.
Oh my God, we're about to pay this quarterback a ton of money.
But I'm wondering, like, what do you think is the funnest team he could end up on?
Oh, the Rams, I think, would be fun.
Oh, like, my gosh.
Let's just swap out DeSean Jackson and Tutu Atwell with Odell. Because I guess Van Jefferson would be the odd man out. But who's stopping Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Odell with this version of Stafford and McVay? Like, that to me, that would be the most fun team. Also, Baltimore would be pretty fun, too.
Yeah, Baltimore would be good because then you kind of get what you were hoping with Bateman. Obviously, Bateman's been hurt, and he could still have a good rookie year, but you're like getting a veteran who can replicate what he does. You don't have to just hope a rookie's going to break out. I want to see him on the Chiefs because I think they could use a second receiver, like someone to play that Sammy Watkins role when teams are taking away Hill and they're doubling Kelsey. I want them to have that other option. Obviously, like, Mahomes already has enough talent around him, but like, that's been the problem, is they haven't had the second receiver who can win if you're gonna do all this coverage stuff to take away Hill and Kelsey. So that, I think that would be my pick.
Yeah, I also just think the Chiefs, they could use an extra receiver just kind of help Kelsey a little bit, because he's drawn some pretty tough coverage matchups. Like, I think in the Giants game last week, he got a handful of reps where he was man up on James Bradbury, which that could be a tough matchup for a guy, especially as he gets a little bit older. I'm not saying like he's washed or anything, but if you get Odell, like, that just becomes, you know, the offense that is impossible to guard again. But you know, Baker Mayfield, like, you couldn't even do what Eli Manning did. Like, you just close your eyes and just kind of throw it up in there and just see what happens. Like, how many times did Eli just, Odell's down there somewhere.
He did it with touch, though. That's Stevens. Yeah. That's Eli, he had touch when he closed.
Yeah, he had touch when he was, you know, closing his eyes and throwing behind his back.
I don't think Eli had a choice. He had to throw it with touch.
Yeah. Just his arm. That's his strength. Touch.
But yeah, it's just, and also it's just disappointing. Like, because when I watch him on film, like, I don't see like some super washed receiver that can't get it done anymore. He's just not getting the opportunities that he needs. And, you know, this has been going on for a couple of years now. And, you know, someone who had, before he got to the Browns, was like on pace to be one of the best receivers of all time, is now just kind of becoming afterthought over the last couple of years, which stinks a lot.
Here's the thing about that video, by the way, like, or Odell's dad's caption for it. There was nothing that like directly implicated Baker Mayfield in the video. It was just saying Odell is always open, and then it presented the visual evidence that he was always open. So the Browns taking this as an insult to Baker Mayfield, like, they're kind of like filling in the blanks themselves. They're saying the quiet part loud, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. So now I guess that gets to the discussion of, like, what do you do next if you're Cleveland? Like, if you're kind of admitting a little bit that maybe Baker is not the guy we thought him out to be, like, what's next? Do you still pay him that, you know, $35+ million contract he's going to be asking for?
It's funny. Rashad Higgins liked the tweet, by the way. We should point, or like the Instagram post, by the way. We should point that out. Another Browns receiver. And then, like, all the cornerbacks around the league, like, commenting, like, oh, yeah, he's open.
Yeah, it was like Darius Slay and Chris Harris Jr., you know, two of the best cornerbacks of, like, this past decade of football. Oh, yeah, Odell, he's always open. Thank you for not throwing it to him, Baker Mayfield.
And one of the funny things is that Chris Harris was on one of the teams featured in the video. Like, he was on the Chargers.
So yeah, the Browns, you got a fun little mess on your hand. I thought it was also interesting that, you know, someone asked Baker yesterday, like, would you accept an apology from Odell? I'm like, what does Odell need to apologize for? What did he do? Like, unless there's something going on behind the scenes where he's just been like a humongous asshole. But outside of that, what did Odell do here that he has to apologize for besides, you know, having his career fizzle out with the Giants and then getting traded to the Browns, where they have like one of the few quarterbacks in the league who wouldn't be able to find him?
Like, I mean, the Browns are signaling what they're going to do, right? Like, they have to cut him. Right, but I mean, with that, they are going to sign Baker, right? Like this, like they're all in on Baker. It certainly feels like.
I get that to a degree. I mean, as long as any of us have been alive, the Browns have been a straight nothing football franchise. So I understand that, like, you're going to re-sign the best quarterback you've had in like 30 or 40 years, which is like, this is Baker Mayfield we're talking about. It's not like some superstar quarterback. So yeah, I understand that you're going to re-sign him. I just find it interesting, like, at what cost are you doing this? And to me, like the Odell stuff, I would just be pretty concerned that we couldn't make this thing work.
Yeah, that would be my takeaway from it is our quarterback couldn't make a receiver who has proven to be very good. And I'm sure the coaches are watching the film and see him getting wide open. So they have to know in the back of their mind, like, oh, Odell's dad kind of has a point.
Yeah. So, we'll see what happens there. But it's also like kind of disappointing that this is what looked like to be one of the better front offices in the league, and they just haven't been able to get a handle on this situation.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I got to get out of here. I got to stop committing time sets.
All right. Well, we can get to our picks without you then. Thanks for hopping on, bud.
Thanks, Steven. Take care, buddy. Charles, the Dolphins, certainly not to our surprise, did not end up trading for Deshaun Watson. Apparently, it came down to the owner, Stephen Ross, wanted to he wanted Deshaun Watson to settle all. I think it's 22 is the number of suits against. He just wanted him to settle all of those with NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, with all the women who've accused Deshaun Watson of sexual impropriety while receiving massages. He just wanted that to all go away, and then he was going to make the trade, which just seems insane. Like,
yeah, and I think it's interesting that, you know, the powers that be, whether it be, you know, the owner in the NFL, Deshaun Watson, you know, whoever it is, like, why did they think that these women would care about a trade? You know, we need to get this settlement time so we can trade. That has nothing to do with like carrying out whatever sense of justice is going to happen in this scenario. So, you know, I think basically like what was said in, you know, March, April, like when this stuff was first really coming out, came out to be true, where people were like, you don't know how long this is going to take. Like, right. I don't know what's, how long, you know, the Deshaun Watson settlement, or if it's going to go to criminal trial. Like, it's impossible to know how long any of this process is going to take. So to kind of assume that you can just kind of squeeze a little trade in there when there's so much uncertainty about like his future as an NFL player and like his future as a free person. I think we've kind of reached like the logical close to this for now, and then we'll restart it back up in what, you know, February or March, whatever, when the new league year is about to kick off. But I think that this kind of reached an end that was predictable for now, if you just followed like common sense and logic.
I can't. I just love the imagery here that's being projected by the Dolphins, which is that if you're a player, we want to trade for you, even though you've been accused of sexual assault by 22 women. We're okay with adding you to our team as long as you pay them off. Like, as long as you've, like, you know, whatever, that you've just sort of made it go away, which is just like, I mean, I know that I've been following the NFL for a long time, so I should not be surprised, but it's a little surprising. It's a little surprising that was what they wanted. You know,
this is just such a mess. Like, there's part of me that's not a part of me, like a lot of me is glad that this trade didn't go through, because like I can't deal with the discourse right now. Like, it's just it's all bad. And there's really like only one logical side that it doesn't make sense to do this trade right now. And I mean, the Texans, like, they basically have him on paid leave right now. Like, they're burning an inactive spot just to not have him there. Like, I don't think it makes much sense to, like, execute a trade for him right now.
Right.
And, you know, that's what happened. And then, you know, you can even go into the Dolphins. Like, you're 1-7 with the worst point differential than the Jets. It probably doesn't even make sense for you to be making this trade right now anyway. So now you're just going to sit on your hands and see what happens with Tua, and we're all going to be put back in the uncomfortable spot of talking about this in a few months.
Can't wait for the offseason.
Ooh.
Fun. All right, let's get to picks. Rough week for you last week, 6-9. Meanwhile, Charles Curtis catching up. He went 9-6. You are promising a bounce back week. Let's get to them. Jets, Colts. Colts are a 10.5 point favorite.
Yeah, I went Jets. This
Mike Colts White. Team, you gotta go Mike White.
Gotta go Mike White. White Mike. I don't think that this Colts team should be favored by 10 against anyone. And you know, I thought that the Browns were not the Browns. The Bengals are a better team than the Colts, and they just lost a few days ago. So I don't really know why the Colts would be favored by 10.5, especially when, like, Carson Wentz just Carson Wentz that game away in only the way that Carson Wentz can.
Let's make Carson Wentzing a verb. When you just try.
When you flail and you throw an interception.
You just try way too hard and the worst thing happens.
Yeah, he's like throwing a pick literally like half a yard away from the end zone, and the guy falls into the end zone as he's catching the interception. Great job, Carson.
Brutal. Browns at Bengals. Bengals minus 2.5.
I want the Browns to cover this. I to me, this is just more about, you know, and I know we just ragged on the Browns for like 15 minutes, but you know, you just look at the talent on this roster. You know, you're going to get another week where Nick Chubb is like a little further away from that injury that he suffered a couple weeks ago. I just kind of believe in the whole talent on this roster, and I think that they can get a win in Cincinnati. I don't think it's going to be easy by any stretch, but they definitely have the pieces to get it done.
Patriots at Panthers. Pats are favored by 3.5. Sam Darnold going to be seeing ghosts this game?
Yes. How is he going to score? You know, it's interesting because, like, there were stretches against the Falcons defense where they struggled to move the ball, and now you get a team that is playing defense at a much higher level than Atlanta is. And, like, when I look at the Patriots defense, like, this is the perfect defense to shut down the Panthers, because, I mean, they're a lot more physical, they're big up front, and then they can play man coverage on the back end. Like, this is I don't want to say, like, we're gonna get, you know, Sam Darnold Ghost 2.0, but we might get something in the same realm, because this Panthers passing offense is putrid right now.
Vikings at Ravens. Ravens are a 6.5 point favorite here.
I took the Vikings just because the Ravens defense has been pretty shaky this year. Like, I don't doubt that Lamar can come up with enough answers to outscore the Vikings. And, you know, to me, that Vikings Cowboys game is this era of Vikings football. They just always have a few games per season where they just totally, like, underwhelm based on their talent. Like, this is a pretty good football team that just can't seem to get out of its own way. At least that's kind of how I view the Vikings.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they'll win, but I definitely think they have enough pieces to make it close. I mean, you just look at how banged up the Ravens defense is. They haven't really been that great all season. I mean, they kind of were the defense to get Carson Wentz, like, back on his little comeback tour.
Right.
When he gave 400 passing yards to him a few weeks ago. So yeah. I'm going to roll with the Vikings this week to cover that 6.5 points.
Spread. Yeah, I don't think Wink Martindale has really figured out how to make it work without those great corners, you know.
It's tough. I mean, if you want to be a team that man blitzes all the time, you're going to need some corners. And when Marlon Humphrey has, like, his one or two games where he looks like a C-level corner, like he did against the Bengals, you're not going to beat many people.
Yeah. And the Vikings, I feel like, might be one of the most frustrating teams to root for in the NFL. Because, like you said, they're a good football team, but that's sort of it, right? Like, they're just a good football team. There's not, like, really a path to, like, oh, they could be great if they do this. And they're probably not going to fall all the way off. Like, they are just very steady good. That's who the Vikings are.
There's the three branches of, like, the you know, the Falcon-esque teams, where you have Atlanta in the south, you got the Chargers out west, and you got the Vikings in the north. So that's what you're dealing with when you think about the Vikings.
Bills at Jaguars. Jags are getting 14 and a half points here.
Bills. You know, but also, can we take a moment to like acknowledge how bad you have to be 14 and a half point home dogs?
Urban Meyer, bad.
Yeah, you just got slaughtered by Geno Smith. And, you know, it's so funny because I was just talking to right before we recorded, I was talking to my buddy John Shipley, who covers the Jaguars for Jaguar Report for Sports Illustrated. He does a fantastic job, you know, just kind of sludging through all that crap.
Yeah, that's a rough gig, man.
They were just talking to Joe Collin, the defensive coordinator this morning for Jacksonville. And, you know, Jacksonville against Seattle, they had a couple plays, two plays back-to-back where they got a 12-man on the field penalty, and then they had to call a timeout because they're about to get another 12-man on the field penalty. So, you know, Joe Collin was – today he was asked about, like, is the defense too complex? Like, is this something that you're going to have to dial back? And Joe Collin said, well, actually, we only have four personnel packages.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, four.
And then, they're still getting extra guys out there.
Yeah, and then Joe also revealed that when he was with the Ravens, they had 11. So, you know, I think right there, you know, the Jaguars, they can barely handle four personnel packages, and the Ravens can handle in the double digits. And I think that's why you see the Ravens are bad and the Jaguars are good. I flipped it around. The Jaguars are bad and the Ravens are good.
Texans at Dolphins. They're apparently going to play this football game, I guess. Dolphins are a 6.5-point favorite here.
Yeah, I took Texans. And honestly, this is before I found out that Tyrod Taylor was going to be the starting quarterback again.
Right.
So I don't know if Charles C is going to get in there and change that pick now that we have the information. But if Tyrod's going to be the quarterback, I don't really see why the Dolphins should be favored at all. Like, I think this should probably be like close to a pick 'em,
right?
Just based on how Tyrod was playing before he got hurt. So I think that the Texans can win this game and definitely cover that 6.5-point spread.
By the way, I want to point out that earlier you were trying to talk about Davis Mills and you called him Davis Webb, which is just incredible quarterback recall. By the way, the fact that you still know Davis Webb exists.
Like, yeah, tell me I covered the New York Giants. And I'll cover the
New York Giants. There you go. Broncos at Cowboys. Cowboys are a 9.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I took the Cowboys. The Broncos, they just kind of seem to be they're turning in the wrong direction. I don't know if they're like punting on the year, but you know, losing Von Miller before you play arguably like the best or the second best offense in the league, especially with their quarterback back, is going to be difficult. And also, the Cowboys are wearing like these really cool America stickers on their helmet this week, which I think is going to help them get the dub.
There you go. There you go. Raiders at Giants. Giants are getting 2.5 in this one.
I picked the Giants this week, and honestly, this is just Raiders. What a week. I mean, there's really nothing left to say that hasn't been said about the whole Henry Ruggs situation. I mean, it's just tragic on so many different levels, reckless, sad. But like, this is a pretty big distraction to have just hanging in the middle of your week. So, you gotta, you know, Henry Ruggs, he'd been a pretty big part of that offense, and now he's obviously gone due to that situation. I think that that's a big distraction. So I actually think that the Giants can kind of hold their own at home this week. Like, that definitely helps. Like, you don't have to travel, and you know, this team is dealing with a truly horrendous situation, and they have to travel across the country and play. That's going to be that should create a situation where the Giants can cover. And if they can't, like, if you can't cover or win in this situation, I really don't know why Joe Judge is there.
See, current, Judge.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know why Joe Judge is there now, because, you know, the most baffling thing about the Giants is, well, actually, you know, we do need to talk about the Giants a little bit, because, you know, you have the situation where, you know, they're messing up timeouts and challenges and stuff like that, mismanaging the clock, and Joe Judge does not call offense or defensive plays. It's like, what do you do
right
here? Like, on the game days, what do you do? Like, you're not calling plays. You
should be game managing.
You should be like a savant at game managing, right, if you're not going to be calling offensive or defensive plays. And then, you know, after the game, Joe Judge says, oh, we've been having, you know, technical difficulties with our headsets literally the entire season. So you waited 8 weeks to speak up against it now? Because usually when you know, teams are having like really big technical difficulties, you can't even get out of the game without a head coach like crying and throwing a fit. Like, right, you'll see it on the broadcast. So, you know, you sat around this for 2 months, and then the NFL is like, actually, there's no problem with your headset. So, the Giants, let's just cut the cord on this now.
I'm very reluctant to call the IT department too, but I'm just lazy, you know, and I just find a workaround. But Joe Judge has got a, he's got a pretty sweet gig.
Like, enough where you don't even have to call the IT. You can just get like some control staff to do it for you.
Yeah, you have minions to engage on that. Falcons at Saints. The Saints are a 5.5-point favorite here.
Pains me, but I took the Saints. I mean, I've seen this before, including twice last year, where the Falcons lost to Taysom Hill. I just don't think that they're a good enough team. I do think that the Falcons are better coached than they were last year, but overall, the talent level is just not enough to get past the Saints squad, who, even though they were a cap hell, still managed to put together a pretty damn good roster.
Is Taysom Hill definitely playing? Do we know?
I'm pretty sure it's either Taysom Hill or Trevor Siemian. I don't trust the Falcons to be either one. So,
jeez, do you think the Saints will call Philip? I mean, why wouldn't they call Philip Rivers?
Because Sean Payton's a troll and doesn't mind playing with Taysom Hill. Like, if I were them, I would totally call Philip Rivers. I probably would have called before the season started.
And he's like a perfect fit for what they had Drew Brees do last year. You know, take what's there.
I don't really know what they're waiting for. I just maintain that Sean Payton is a massive troll, and he wouldn't be upset at trying to beat the Falcons again with Taysom Hill.
I love this theory. I just love it. Chargers at Eagles. Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite.
I went with the Chargers. This Eagles team is just not good. I just think they're really fake. A lot of their close scores have been just straight garbage time stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm continuing to be confused by why Vegas is like kind of high on them each week. But I don't think the Chargers will have much of a problem getting this thing done.
Packers at Chiefs. We talked a little bit about this before, but the Chiefs are giving 7.5 here. Wow.
Yeah, I went with the Chiefs just because it's Jordan Love's first start. And I know that he's playing against like an ACC defense this week, but it's pretty difficult for that to be your first start in your career on the road, Arrowhead, against a Chiefs team that like has got to have it. So, you know, the Chiefs, like, they've kind of reached this point in the season where they can't really afford to lose that many more games. Cause right now, like, if you just look at how the playoffs are seeded, and I know there's still, you know, another half of the season left to go, but if it were to end today, the Chiefs would be the ninth seed, which we know does not get you into the playoffs. So, you know, this is a team that really needs to start picking up wins now. And I think, you know, against an Aaron Rodgers-less Packers team, they should be able to cover this spread.
Cardinals at 49ers. 49ers only minus a half a point here, which I mean, this was the most interesting spread for me this week.
Yeah, same.
Says a lot about some doubts, I guess, that Vegas is having about the Cardinals. You went with the Cardinals here, though, to cover.
Yeah, this spread was really interesting to me because is there a player that the Cardinals are missing that, like, you don't know about? Because, you know, I feel like
there's something. I mean, 49ers are at home, but the Cardinals played Thursday night too. They have extra time, you know.
Right, you're coming off a 10-day rest for the Cardinals. So to me, I just went with like, I'm not going to overthink this because, you know, when you're at 0.5, that's basically a pick 'em.
Right.
So I'm just going to roll with the team that I think is better, which is the Cardinals.
Titans at Rams. Rams minus 7.5.
I went with the Rams, and to me, it's just kind of like the perfect time for the Rams to catch them. You know. Putting Von Miller into your defense is like a pretty easy thing to figure out in a week. Like, hey, go stand next to Aaron Donald and then do what you've done for the past decade, like, which is just destroy offenses.
What's Von Miller's stat line going to look like?
You know, I'm going to go with like 2 sacks, 3 quarterback hits, and another 2 pressures.
Yeah, definitely. Feels like one of those where it's a big game after a trade.
Yeah, and just think about, like, if Dante Fowler and Leonard Floyd can have double-digit sacks next to Aaron Donald, I don't see why Von Miller couldn't do that in, like, half a season. next to Aaron Donald. And I just think, like, when you look at the two, I guess, roster moves that each of these teams had to make, it's pretty easy to just plug in Von Miller, say, go rush the passer next to Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd. That's an easy thing to do. But, you know, on the Titans side, trying to figure out how you're going to reshape this offense without Derrick Henry, and, you know, even if Julio Jones is still dinged up, that's going to be pretty tough to figure out on the fly. Like, and I kind of think that they will figure out a workaround to that Henry injury in a couple of weeks, but the first week back from that, that's going to be pretty tough. So I'm rolling with the Rams.
Bears at Steelers. Man, this is another game. Steelers minus 5.5.
I went with the Steelers just because I know that Justin Fields had a good game last week, and I am still feeling real confident that he's going to turn out to be a good NFL quarterback. But still, as of now, the Bears offense has put up way more bad tape than good tape. So I'm going to roll with the Steelers here. I think that this is kind of like a get right-ish game for the Steelers defense. Like, they've slowly been getting better as the season's gone along. And, you know, especially last week, basically shutting down the Browns offense totally. So I'm going to roll with the Steelers in an absolute slop fest game. And I am just hurt that this game is on Monday Night Football, because you know that the takes are going to be extreme in both.
Oh, games. Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be. Yeah, that's a good point. That's the worst thing about a bad game being in a primetime slot, is not that it's like tough for us to watch. It's that no matter what, the take machine turns on and functions at the same level, even if the grist going into the machine is not worth anything. Like, we're still going to get the same level of, like,
because everyone lies about how much football they watch. And, you know, your casual fan is claiming that, oh yeah, I've seen all these Justin Fields games. Now you've probably only seen the ones that's on primetime. And I don't blame you, because why would you be doing that in your spare time anyways? Like, if you're not getting paid for it. So, you know, that's why those national games tend to hold more weight than the 1 o'clock games or the 4 o'clock games, even though they all count the same.
Right. All right. I think that's all we got for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for being here for 100 shows. Hopefully we have a few more coming. We'll be around throughout the rest of the week. Find Charles at Forverts. I'm at Chris Corman. On Twitter, we'll be talking about football. Anything else, Charles? Did we miss anything? Anything else going on?
No, we'll be back on Tuesday.
We'll be back then. We're kind of turning the corner here, right? Week 9, 18 weeks like officially this year. So.
Yeah, so we're at the halfway point pretty much now.
Awesome. Well, we will have more next week. And thanks again. Take care.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.